I'm Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, the hidden costs of Amazon's ever faster delivery promises. We'll spend this hour with BuzzFeed reporter Caroline O'Donovan, who investigated the retailer's arrangement with delivery contractors across the United States. Amazon dictates routes and monitors drivers' efficiency as they're pressured to drop off hundreds of packages every day without the kind of safety training required of, say, UPS and FedEx workers. And when harried drivers cause accidents or are hurt on the job, Amazon often takes no responsibility. Our conversation starts after a short break. Done this. Placed an order on Amazon for something I did not need right away. But then when I go to check out and I have the option to choose free one-day delivery, I think, sure, why not? And with the click of my order, I have set in motion a series of events that begins in an Amazon warehouse and adds one more package to an already overloaded contract delivery van to be raced through the streets of my neighborhood by a driver who may have little or no professional training. Amazon will literally monitor the driver's every turn and stop and drop off to ensure its deliveries happen as promised, regardless of weather or traffic or anything else. But if that driver's fast or careless driving causes an accident, even a fatal one, Amazon will likely say the wreck had nothing to do with them. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Caroline O'Donovan is a reporter with BuzzFeed News, which published her article, Amazon's Next Day Delivery Has Brought Chaos and Carnage to America's Streets, but the world's biggest retailer has a system to escape the blame. She's here now to talk about how Amazon gets 5 million packages a day to American doorsteps without accepting liability between one stop and the next. Caroline, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you open your piece by telling us about a young man named Valdemar Gray out delivering for Amazon 3 days before Christmas in 2016. What happened that day?
Unfortunately and tragically for the family of Telesfora Escamilla, while Mr. Gray was out making deliveries in that afternoon, he made a turn into a crosswalk where she was walking home from the hairdresser and unfortunately struck and killed her. And he ended up being charged with reckless homicide, although he was acquitted actually just a couple of weeks ago.
So he didn't technically work for Amazon, but he worked for a contractor called Inpax Shipping Solutions. What kind of arrangement did Amazon have with Inpax?
Sure. So Inpax is a Georgia-based delivery company. About 70% of their business, according to their CEO, is Amazon. And that's what they were doing in Chicago. They were based entirely out of, there are a few Amazon delivery stations throughout the greater Chicago area, but the one in question is on the south side of the city. And their operation there is based out of the Amazon delivery station that's there. And Valdemar Gray is employed by that company to make deliveries for Amazon throughout the neighborhood that he was delivering in. So he was a direct employee of Inpax, not of Amazon, but he had a van that was full entirely of Amazon packages that he was delivering in Chicago in December.
And of course, Amazon has the ability, I know this because when I'm waiting for a package, it'll tell me the van is six stops away, it's three stops away. They're watching everything these drivers do, even if they don't work for them.
That's right. Actually, in recent months, they've even given customers in some cities the ability to see where their driver is. And I've actually talked to drivers who say customers will approach them in their van, like, you know, drive to where they see the van on a map and say, hey, can I get my package out of the van right now? And the drivers are like, I don't know who you are. No, you know, I'm just trying to do my job. But yes, so Valdemar is, you know, following a route prescribed by Amazon. All Amazon delivery drivers are following a route prescribed by Amazon that tells them not only where to go, but what order to visit the houses in and where to make certain turns.
So Inpax was paying its drivers a flat daily rate, whether there were few packages or a lot, which, of course, over the holiday season, we all know that those numbers increase. Were most drivers able to get their parcels where they needed to go over the course of like a standard 8-hour shift?
For the most part, no. I mean, there are some drivers who are more efficient. Amazon delivery routes don't necessarily give the same person the same vehicle or the same route every day. So there can be some, it's difficult, you know, when you're not driving the same route to do that as efficiently as possible. So drivers have described, you know, 10-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts, driving late into the night in neighborhoods you've never been in before, in neighborhoods you're potentially not very comfortable driving in. It's dark out. In this case, you know, it's also very cold, and there can be 200, 250, 300 packages. So no, I think it wasn't all that common that drivers were able to complete their route within 8 hours. Drivers are obviously also trying to, you know, it's they want to go home as soon as possible, so they're trying to drive as quickly as possible. And they're also getting calls throughout that shift from dispatchers who are seated in the same delivery station as Amazon employees who are telling, you know, asking them, where's this driver? Where's that driver? Are they going to finish their route on time today? Those dispatchers, in turn, who are employees of the same delivery service partners that Amazon is contracting with, are then calling those drivers and asking them where they are along the route. But especially as you're leading up towards peak seasons for Amazon, which are, you know, Prime Day, which is a huge sales day for them, and the holiday season when people are ordering tons and tons of packages and sort of being encouraged by Amazon to order more by a certain time, it's very difficult for them to deliver all of that by, you know, what we would consider 8 or 10 hour reasonable workday.
It gives me anxiety just thinking about it. Like, what recommendations do these contractors like Impacts or Amazon itself make if people say, I can't possibly get 200 packages where they need to go in 8 hours? What? How did they suggest they get this done?
Well, I think what I've heard from a lot of people who have been in that position is it's not really an option to not get the packages where they're supposed to go. The contract companies sign contracts with Amazon that say they're responsible for getting 99.9% of those packages where they're supposed to be on time, or the contracts that they've signed, the routes that they've been given by Amazon to fulfill, could be taken away from them. And you have to understand that these are companies that have already leased vans, hired people, paid for insurance, but Amazon sort of holds the strings in how much money they can be making. So it is very difficult to meet those standards, but there is an incredible financial pressure on the companies and therefore the drivers they employ to meet them.
Sometimes.
And it is anxiety inducing. I mean, yeah. I've talked to people who said they had drivers, dispatchers who had drivers quit in the middle of their shift. Sometimes they, you know, come back from their route to the delivery station and say, I'm done. Here are the keys. I'm not doing this. Hmm. Sometimes they don't even do that. I've heard of vans being left, you know, in the middle of the road. And someone says to their friend, hey, come pick me up. And someone else has to go get the van wherever it was abandoned.
Wow. Do you know, do these companies, these delivery contractors, make allowances for something like bad weather or the type of neighborhood you're in? There are certain, I think we all know there are like easy suburban areas where the streets are wide apart and you can get back and forth pretty easily. And then really dense urban areas might be very hard to deliver to.
Sure. I mean, you have situations where there are, for example, apartment buildings where there might be dozens of packages going throughout the same building, which means you're spending a lot of time going in and out of the van, talking to the person in the lobby. Maybe you've never been to this building before. You have to figure out where you're supposed to leave them. Meanwhile, your van, unmarked, is outside, you know. Hopefully you haven't left it idling, although sometimes they do. And there's not necessarily a place for you to park it. So maybe it's in a bike lane, or you know, maybe it's getting ticketed, causing all kinds of problems. And as far as weather, I mean, I spoke to an individual who was a dispatcher in Florida who said he had trouble explaining to the Amazon employees who worked at the delivery station he was in why he didn't want to send drivers out during flood season because roads were entirely blocked off. And he was asked, you know, well, could they get out and walk to someone's house? And so I think weather for sure is problematic.
Hmm. Okay, so what sort of relationship does Amazon have with the contract delivery services it works with around the country? I mean, you know, you're contracting a plumber when you bring a plumber onto the Amazon campus to fix something. Is the relationship inherently different with these delivery companies?
I think you have to think about how much control you have over the company that you're contracting with. So some of these delivery service partners that we looked into, 100% of their business is coming from Amazon, right? So when you're hiring a plumber, that person has a bunch of different clients. In this case, that's not always how the contract is playing out. sorry.
My guest is Caroline O'Donovan. She's with BuzzFeed, and she's talking to us about problems with Amazon's next-day delivery service and safety around the country.
And then, so in addition to the fact that they don't have that many other clients and all the work they're doing is for Amazon, they're also often based out of Amazon delivery stations. Amazon is determining, 100% of where they're supposed to go. They're giving them the routes. They're sort of, you know, giving them guidelines about what kind of vehicles they want them to drive. They're setting their schedules. the only thing that's really tying the drivers directly to the contractor is that that's where their paycheck comes from.
So when you reached out to Amazon about what you'd been finding in your reporting, they told you they were committed to continuously improving safety. Did they explain to you how they are continuously improving safety?
No, we did not get many more details than that, although this morning three senators sent Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos a letter asking that the company, by September 27th, elaborate on what those safety safeguards might be. So I think we're excited and interested to see what the company's response will be to that letter.
All right, I want to take a step back here. Just for comparison, talk a little bit about what the big delivery services, DHL, FedEx, UPS, that sort of thing, what resources did they commit to safety?
Sure. So I think one thing that's really important to understand is that when you're thinking, so Amazon has, some of Amazon's deliveries over in the past have been fulfilled by UPS, FedEx, and the U.S. Postal Service. And while FedEx did cancel its contract with Amazon over the summer, UPS and USPS still do fulfill some of their deliveries, but the vast majority of the vehicles that FedEx and UPS use are regulated by the Federal Department of Transportation because of their size, they're considered commercial vehicles because of their size, and in some cases because they cross state lines. The Sprinter vans that Amazon asks its delivery service partners to use are not regulated by the federal government, so that's a major difference in that there's no one really keeping track of accidents. There's no one, doing the vehicle checks and the driver checks that would occur for those larger vehicles that are being used by UPS and FedEx. UPS and FedEx also, those brands are very familiar to a resident of a neighborhood, right? You know what a UPS truck looks like. You know what a FedEx truck looks like. And for that reason, because of the legal liability, they've invested in safety over time. So they spend, millions of dollars, they say, every year on training. From our reporting, we learned that those drivers, especially UPS, which is a union company, they're incentivized, not to get into accidents. People tend to work for those companies over long periods of time, and they try to keep their records as clean as possible. The companies offer workers rewards. If you don't get into any accident for a certain number of years, you might get a watch or something like that over the course of your career. And the routing algorithms that they use to direct the drivers also have certain protections in them. UPS drivers, generally speaking, are never asked to turn left by the routes that they're using. That saves them time, but it also, reduces accidents. And they get a lot more training than the Amazon delivery service partners get, for sure.
And it sounds like UPS drivers are not habitually quitting in the middle of their shift and leaving a van out in the middle of a city somewhere.
I've never heard of it.
So if there's this kind of turnover, it sounds like these companies are having to go to unusual lengths to recruit workers.
Yes. Amazon says they pay a competitive wage of $15 an hour. I think in the earlier years of this program that worked out to a little bit less, especially if you're considering a day rate for a shift that might be going on 10 or 12 hours. Most of the drivers I talked to felt like the wage didn't really justify the amount of physical labor they were doing, the amount of risk they were taking, the hours, the sort of level of responsibility, and the intensity of the job. So it tends to be, in my experience from talking to people, a job that someone seeks out because they really need the work, and as soon as they find something else, they're going to want to, move on, especially because of how grueling it is and how much time it takes up, for sure. So there's a lot of pressure, and in general, unemployment is relatively low, and if you follow trucking blogs, you'll see that there's a general shortage of people who are hireable in the shipping and delivery industry. So it's difficult to hire these people. And if there are Facebook groups of people who own these delivery service partner companies, chatting about the different costs and challenges in their business, and almost everyone I've talked to says that hiring and recruiting and training and then replacing those people as they, burn out and quit is one of if not the biggest expense of the business, for sure. So, in our reporting, we looked at, there's pretty much constantly job listings on Indeed.com and Glassdoor and sites like that, looking for people who can drive.
My guest is journalist Caroline O'Donovan. She reports for BuzzFeed and has a recent article about Amazon's next day delivery service and delivery drivers who've been involved in accidents over the years, with Amazon accepting no liability for those accidents. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, call 1-800-933-5372 or find us on Twitter at KERA Think. This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with journalist Caroline O'Donovan of BuzzFeed News about Amazon's next-day delivery service and speedy delivery service, which contracts around the country with contract delivery services rather than having Amazon itself hire drivers directly. When those drivers get into accidents and have problems, the company says it has no responsibility. One thing that interested me, Caroline, was Amazon ordered up a very large number of these Sprinter vans that you mentioned a moment ago that it prefers for its contractors to use. And it leases those back to companies that want to drive for it?
Yeah, that's right. The Sprinter van is an interesting thing. So that's the vehicle that comes in, you know, just under the Department of Transportation size limits for the kind of oversight I was talking about earlier, where you have inspectors checking in on drivers, making sure that, you know, they're getting enough rest and that they have the right kind of licenses, and checking on the vehicles, making sure that their, you know, tires aren't bald and that their brakes are working and their headlights are on and stuff. These Sprinter vans, as long as they're not crossing state lines, even if they're doing commercial business, they're not regulated by the Department of Transportation. You know, I've also heard that Amazon likes them because they have a lot of cubic space in the back for holding packages. They also, you know, they have like a little bit of a kick to them. They can drive kind of fast, which some people I spoke to said was sort of a concern when you have people who don't have professional driving experience getting behind the wheel after just a couple of days of, you know, training next to someone. But yeah, that's the vehicle that, yes, Amazon has asked its delivery service partners to invest in, or in the case of this sort of a newer wave of companies, which is referred to within the community as delivery service partners 2.0, they actually purchase the vehicles themselves, and then they will be leasing them to their new delivery service partners.
What requirements does Amazon have for its contractors in terms of the way that they screen and hire drivers?
So that's sort of been a shifting thing over the, you know, 5 or 6 years that the program has been in place. They do run background checks, and they do say, you know, drivers have to pass drug tests, although I don't believe that they randomly drug test or update background checks. So that's, you know, when you're hired, not necessarily something that's done repeatedly if you're there for a year or two. But beyond that, you know, it's the discretion of the delivery service partner ultimately on who they're hiring.
I realize this is anecdotal, but you have a story in your book about someone who was asked to train a fellow driver that doesn't sound like someone that we would want driving slowly through our neighborhoods. Will you tell us that story?
Yeah, that story is actually out of San Francisco, which is the city I am currently in. Yeah, this was toward the beginning of the program. So when drivers are hired, they do ride along. So it's like you're driving the van and I'm sitting in the seat next to you and I'm kind of watching you do the job, and you're maybe giving me some pointers along the way on how to be efficient, how to deal with the dispatchers, you know, how to whatever, you know, talk to dogs that want to bite you, stuff like that. And in this particular case, yes, Jose Guillermo Perez was in the seat next to a driver who he felt was driving unsafely. And this individual, it was already had, you know, some concerns. He'd seen vehicles going out that he felt like weren't in particularly good condition. The shocks were kind of old and the tires were kind of worn. And then, you know, he saw the number of packages people were expected to deliver in a day in San Francisco, which kind of got a lot of hills, got a lot of little roads and stuff like that. And he was already concerned that this wasn't necessarily a job that he wanted to pursue. He's paired with this driver who he's sort of concerned is driving erratically and, you know, later will turn out to have not so great driving history and a criminal background as well. They stop for their lunch break. They get back in get the van back driving. The guy backs into a light post. And, you know, the Jose Perez, the person who's being trained, says, you know, hey, man, like, what's the deal? You got to be careful here. But he doesn't get out of the van to check the damage, just keeps driving and kind of says, like, we got to hurry up. We got to get back to the warehouse. And unfortunately, he ends up blowing through a stoplight as it's turning red and colliding with a motorcyclist and injuring him pretty grievously, actually, although he did survive.
And when you mentioned that training driver had a criminal record, he had a criminal record of sex offenses with minors.
Yes, that's true. And he also, he had previously pled guilty to speeding and to running through stop signs and things like that. I don't actually know what the fate of that driver was, but I do know that the trainee was actually sent out on his next shift by himself. The company he worked for, Progistics, essentially said, okay, your training is complete and you're ready to go. And he had, you know, almost 200 packages that day. It was raining and he only got halfway through it before he called the dispatcher and said, I quit. This job is not for me. I don't think it's safe and I don't want to do it.
Does Amazon have the ability to get individual drivers fired if they're looking at these, devices that they have in every van to know how a driver is moving through a city? Can Amazon say, we want driver 614 pulled?
So it's important. There's a couple different kinds of technology around fleet safety. The software that Amazon uses, drivers hold a device called a Rabbit. It's a routing system. It shows where you are, and it doesn't work all that well, frankly. Drivers constantly say the batteries die, or it doesn't know exactly where they are, or it's a very inefficient route. But that software doesn't show you, for example, how fast someone is driving, or if they're taking corners particularly hard, or if they're braking really suddenly all the time. That technology does exist in the world, but the delivery service partners, by and large, are not using it, and Amazon is not requiring them to use it. You were asking me about the rabbits.
If Amazon can get drivers fired.
Oh yes, so they're not firing drivers by monitoring their safety on the road necessarily, but they are able to offboard drivers who maybe aren't hitting the package quotas that they're wanting them to hit. Or getting into altercations with people in the warehouse or for whatever reason it is, but they can't fire them directly, right? So they can't say, you're no longer getting a paycheck from the delivery service company you work for. They just say, this person is no longer eligible to drive for Amazon. And if you put their name into the software to, log them on for the day, it's not going to allow you to do that. Amazon's going to say no. So they say, we're not firing them. We're just not allowing them to drive for us. They can do other jobs for you. The problem is the contractors, by and large, don't have any other work for them to do. Most of them don't have other clients, they don't carry other packages, they don't do other work. So in very few cases you could find an office job for them or something, but de facto it usually means that you're fired by the company that you work for because there's no longer a job for you to do for them.
Sure. And if these companies really need their contracts with Amazon and Amazon says we don't want driver 614, it seems like a pretty obvious thing that's going to happen there. That starts to sound like Amazon is not simply a party hiring this neutral service. I mean, Amazon is watching every move they make and has the power to say this driver, this specific driver is no longer eligible. For the ones that they assume and allow to be eligible, how has Amazon managed to say that it has no legal liability when they mess up in the field?
So there's the delivery service partners sign contracts with Amazon, and those contracts say that Amazon is indemnified by that company. So if they end up in court, if they're sued, whether it's over an accident or over a labor issue, someone says that they're owed money or something like that, these companies have agreed when they sign on with Amazon that any legal fees, any costs that Amazon incurs in the process, they will bear for them. And because Amazon has sort of created this insulating layer, not just of, if you think about an Uber, for example, where the independent contractor is an individual, but there's actually a whole layer of separate LLCs that have an employment relationship and pay the paychecks of these drivers, Amazon is able to say, has frequently succeeded in saying, that they have nothing to do with the companies when they get into accidents, and they have nothing to do with the fact that drivers say, oh, I'm not allowed to take a restroom break, so I'm, urinating into a bottle in my truck. Oh, I've never been able to take a meal break, and so I should be, paid for that time I was working when I was supposed to be resting. Amazon has said in court repeatedly that we never said that you had to do that, even though, they're the ones that say how many packages you have to do and when you're supposed to complete your route by.
Certainly, Amazon could have some influence over the contractors in setting the rules that make driving safer, even if they don't accept any legal liability for accidents that happen on the job.
There's an interesting case of a town in Massachusetts that actually tried to mandate that Amazon would label the vans that were coming in and out of the delivery station there, and Amazon actually sued the town, saying that they didn't want to have to do that. So I think that, that's an interesting case looking at someone who tried to step in and say, hey, there should be different safety regulations around this. And that's how Amazon, responded in that instance.
All right, let's go to the phones. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. We have Maggie calling us from Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. These contractors and their behavior, Amazon seems to be the biggest offender out there right now. I know that California is working on legislation trying to force Uber into making them employees. Will California's legislation or anybody else's impact this at all? I mean, it's a great target if you could actually influence the whole workplace for all of these contract workers.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, sure. So you're talking about AB 5, which is a law that was passed earlier this week in California, which pertains to independent contractors who are employees or are individual workers, and who are the legislature is now saying that, you know, companies like Uber and Lyft should employ them directly and not treat them as independent contractors. So they should have employment protections like, you know, around sick days and things like that should apply to them. This is a similar system in that the legal structure of independent contractors are being used by a corporation to sort of sidestep certain responsibilities. But there's a slight difference in that the delivery service partner companies, like I said, provide that extra layer of insulation between Amazon and the drivers themselves.
What about the vans that we see driving around town that say Amazon on the side?
So those are also the Mercedes-Benz vans that the company is leasing to delivery service partners. So that's part of the same system. And they have, yes, in recent months started deploying vans that actually say Amazon on the side. So you'll see those around in addition to the white vans with the, you know, person, the driver wearing the fluorescent vest.
Does that imply that they are looking to take more responsibility, or would they still say that's not really us, it just says our name on the side?
You know, that's an interesting question. I've definitely seen news reports with, you know, video and photographic images of those vans in accidents. And so it'll be interesting to see what they say in court. You know, most of the court filings I've read, there's a section where Amazon says, you know, we're indemnified by our contractor. This is a third party and we have no responsibility. And therefore, we expect not only not to be named in this lawsuit, but any legal costs that we incur defending ourselves should also be paid by our contractor because this has nothing to do with us. Whether they'll make the same argument in the cases where the van is clearly labeled, I'd be interested to take a look.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. All right, let's go back to the phones now. Patrick is calling us from Dallas, Texas. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. Another point about all these packages that the Amazon delivery people have to drop off is they have a quota. They have to drop off packages like every 3 or 4 minutes. And some of the older guys that I've known that tried to work for Amazon, there's just no way they can keep up with that pace. They can't do it. It's just physically impossible for an older guy.
Certainly a
safety issue and certainly an employment issue.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Have you heard about any kind of age discrimination involved in all this, Caroline?
You know, since this story came out, I actually have received a couple of messages from folks asking us to look into that issue. And you're absolutely right. Drivers are expected, I think, not even 3 or 4 minutes, but closer to like two minutes per package, maybe even less than that in some cases. And it is physically grueling. You know, we talk a little bit in the story about the risks to drivers. Certainly you have your sort of normal, you know, workplace repetitive stress, physically grueling problems, and you also have stuff like I said earlier, people getting, you know, bit by dogs or into, you know, altercations with people who don't know what these people are doing in their neighborhoods, and they end up getting attacked. And then you also have not just pedestrians and, you know, people in the community who are involved in accidents and injured, but the drivers themselves can also end up injured. And we talk a little bit about a young man in Chicago who died while he was working for a delivery service partner on a highway. The story also, you know, touches on what happens when these companies that are sort of, it's not easy to make money in the delivery business. And Amazon, like I was talking about earlier, if you run afoul of what they want you to do, they can really, you know, put the pressure on these companies financially, so they don't have a lot of liquid capital hanging around. And so their bills go unpaid sometimes, you know, bills to banks and to the enterprise if they're, you know, leasing vans from enterprise for damages and also for their workers' compensation insurance. And we talk about a worker who discovered that her employer wasn't paying their workers' compensation insurance. And so her medical bills actually went unpaid after she was bit by a dog, which, you know, caused all kinds of problems for her down the line. So I think, you know, you're right to be concerned about the workers in addition to the people who are on the road with them.
Why do contractors keep getting into this business if they do have legal liability and they're squeezed by Amazon to make their drivers do things that might not be safe?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of packaged as and a unique business opportunity, you know, especially with the more recent the way of the GSP 2.0 program has been sort of packaged that way. Amazon has reached out to its own employees, you know, people who work in warehouses and work for corporate Amazon, and said, there's a $10,000, you know, startup fee, but we'll pay that for you if you want to quit your job with us and start one of these companies. They have a sort of similar incentive program for military veterans. And I think people, you know, it's the American dream, right? People want to be entrepreneurs. Actually, a colleague of mine taught me an interesting phrase that's about Amazon sellers, people who want to start selling goods on Amazon, wantrepreneurs, right? People, there's a desire for people to be their own boss and start their own company. And yes, it'll be difficult at first. And yes, you have to raise some capital to do it. But at some point, you'll reach, you know, a point where you're sort of making money, and then you can do other stuff with your time and not, you know, have a boss breathing down your neck. So I think it seems like a compelling thing, but not everyone thinks all the way through the sort of like liability consequences and what the cost of, as you know, the more accidents your drivers get into, your workers' compensation insurance is going to cost more. Your crash liability insurance is going to cost more, but you're not necessarily getting paid more per package as that's happening. And then also something I've noticed being in the groups where there's people who are, you know, applying to Amazon to hopefully be able to start one of these businesses is they have a lot of questions. They have the same questions that you're asking me now. How much money can you make? How much do I have to pay drivers? How many hours a day am I supposed to work? When do I finally get to take my first, you know, day off? And the people who have already been accepted into the program are starting to say, ooh, you know, I'd share that with you, but I signed an NDA. Huh. I signed a non-disclosure agreement and I'm not supposed to share any information about my contract. So there's a lot of sort of excitement ginned up by Amazon about it. And there's a lot of chatter from people who are, like I said, excited to be their own boss. But when it comes down to like the nitty gritty of the numbers of what you can actually make and how much work it will take and what the risks are, they're actively discouraging people who are already in the business from talking about that.
My guest is journalist Caroline O'Donovan. She's been reporting for BuzzFeed News about problems with drivers for Amazon's next day and second day delivery services around the country. You're listening to Think. My guest this hour is journalist Caroline O'Donovan, who's been reporting for BuzzFeed News about accidents associated with Amazon's next-day delivery service, typically provided by drivers who work for contractors who work for Amazon. We're talking about who's responsible when those drivers get into accidents. Amazon says it typically is not responsible if those drivers work for subcontractors. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 800-933-5372. All right, Caroline. There was a letter sent by Senators Richard Blumenthal, Sherrod Brown, and Elizabeth Warren to Jeff Bezos yesterday asking what is going on with these package delivery services and whether Amazon will take responsibility for conditions that might be dangerous to the public. What do you know about the response to that letter?
Well, I think that, I mean, we wrote a story about the letter this morning and Amazon made a comment to us that was basically the same comment they made to our original story. So I don't know any more about the conversation between the company and those senators. But I do know that the senators sent a long litany of questions that I think are all interesting and good questions. You know, anything from just, can you provide us a list of the names of all these companies, which doesn't currently exist. So after the story came out, you know, a lot of people are asking, well, what is the actual accident rate? How do we know how that compares to UPS and how that compares to FedEx? And the reality is that without knowing the names of the companies, we can't really know the answer to that question because no one's tracking it. And even if we had all the names to all the answers, had all the names of those companies, we still wouldn't really know the answer to that question because there is no regulatory agency making a note of every time one of these drivers gets into an accident. So while UPS and FedEx are able to you know, publish an accident rate and use that metric to set goals for safety, the Amazon delivery network, because, you know, it's made up of these contracting firms, it's not possible to know.
How has Amazon tried to get in the way of union organizations by drivers working for these contract services?
Sure. So in the course of our reporting, we discovered that a delivery service partner called Silver Star was operating in Michigan. They are also in Chicago, but their branch that was in Michigan, you know, there were frustrations over long hours, over their pay, over safety concerns, and they decided to unionize with the Teamsters. Unfortunately, almost as soon as they voted, you know, took that vote and elected or voted to join the Teamsters, some of the drivers who had been involved in organizing that effort were fired by Silver Star. And then Silver Star itself was essentially fired by Amazon. All their routes were canceled in the Michigan area. So they no longer, you know, there were no longer jobs for any of those individuals to actually have. And then we discovered that after that happened, you know, Amazon was concerned and held a meeting in Chicago for the managers of DSPs there to talk to them about unionization and what to do if their drivers were approached by unions about organizing and you know, essentially explain to them that that's not copacetic with Amazon's way of doing business and that they should try to avoid it.
Why did Amazon start, I don't know if you can answer this or not, but why did they start offering this sort of guaranteed next day delivery for Prime members? It's almost like most people hadn't been conditioned to expect that in the first place, and then Amazon started promising it, and now we want it.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question about customer behavior, right, and what we want versus, like you said, a desire that the company is creating. Amazon prides itself on being the most customer-centric company in the world, right? That's they want to serve the customer at all costs. But I've been reading a lot of comments in response to the story, and, you know, there's a lot of people who are saying sort of what you said at the top of the show. I order something and I don't necessarily need it that fast, but if I'm told that I can have it that fast, it's like, sure, why not? But I think hopefully this story, you know, from what I've seen, I think it is, consumers are thinking a little bit more about what goes into making that happen. I think a lot of the work that I do at BuzzFeed is sort of trying to unpack these technologies that seem to make miracles happen, right? Like suddenly it's so easy, frictionless stuff and services that we want. I try to look at, you know, who are the people that are actually making that happen and what are the costs of that are sort of hidden by the software that we're interacting with.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Next up, we'll speak with Richard in Austin, Texas. Hi, Richard.
Hey.
Hi, go right ahead, please. Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know, I've worked for various contractors before, and their employers are sometimes asking for things that are just not possible. Like, they're either, like, completely undoable or they require, like, breaking the law to get done. Mm-hmm. Is there any, like, culpability that the employers have for asking contractors to do things that are unreasonable?
Thanks for calling.
Well, I think, I don't know if you worked for an Amazon contractor or other contractors in general, but I think you're sort of getting to the heart of the tension of the story and the frustration of a lot of the people that I spoke to who say, you know, if we don't live up to what Amazon is asking us to do, if we don't get all the packages there on time, we're at risk of losing our business or being punished by them in another way. But it's very difficult, or like you're saying, maybe impossible to do what they're asking us to do without taking some risks. And I think that's the question of why that system exists is why are they able to set those standards, cut off your business potentially if you don't meet those standards, but then if there are consequences for the steps that you're taking in order to achieve that, they, you know, wash their hands of it and say, this is a third-party contractor and we don't have any responsibility. So I think that, you know, you raise a really good point.
As big as these vehicles are that Amazon wants its contractors to use, they sometimes get overstuffed. I have to tell you, I don't know why this one sticks in my head, but the idea of these drivers being pressured to put packages like on the dashboard and in places that obscure their view out the windshield so that they can carry more with them.
Sure, and I think you're talking about a case that was actually in Texas, in Austin. But yes, there was a driver in a parked vehicle with packages piled up on the dash. She pulled out of the parking spot and collided with a woman who was walking through the parking lot. And when she hopped out of the van and knelt by the woman to see if she was okay, she's, you know, basically said, I didn't see you over the packages I have piled up on the front of my truck. And I actually talked to a number of drivers who said that's fairly standard. And if you check out the story, you can see photographs of, you know, vans I saw with that arrangement when I was reporting in Chicago. And one reason that they, you know, some people said there's just, you run out of room in the back of the van, but then there's this, Amazon uses a system, and I don't want to go into too much detail here, but basically you get to work, you get the keys to the van, you drive your van into the delivery station, and you are handed a bunch of tall bags, and the bags are full of boxes, and you're supposed to put them into your van in reverse order so that as you go from stop to stop, you're working through each bag in the order that your route is. But as an earlier caller mentioned, you know, we're talking about a number of minutes, if not seconds, you know, 30 seconds that people are supposed to jump out of the van, go around the back, get the package, go to the house, take a picture of it to confirm all this stuff. So every second counts when you're doing hundreds of stops and many hundreds of packages a day. And so what some drivers will do is instead of going around the back to go through that bag, they'll lay out the packages in order on the dash and on the seat next to them so that they save that you know, thin margin of time by just having the thing they need right at their fingertips. And then you can also sort of look at all the addresses and see where you're going next. So it's partially a space thing and it's partially an efficiency thing. But obviously, as the case in Austin shows, it's also a safety issue.
All right. Back to the phones now. We have Julio on the line in Dallas. Hi, Julio.
Hello, this is Julio. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions or points to make. Number one is, why can't the Amazon, even though these people are not employed, they're not working on it, but seems like Amazon control every move of these drivers. If they make it mandatory to give the same route to the same people, because I'm a Prime member, I get different people every time. To me, if the same driver is coming, he know where to drop my box and in the neighborhood also.
And it seems to make sense to me as well, Julio. Do you know why it doesn't happen that way, Caroline?
I don't know exactly why it doesn't happen that way. I do know that it is common for UPS drivers to have the same route. Actually, UPS drivers, because they're in a union, have a system where the more seniority you have, you bid on the route that you want. So you know, there's obviously they have a whole process about how you assign someone to a route. At Amazon, it's more, you know, you just show up, you're a name in a list, and you get randomly assigned to that route that day. And the routes are also not necessarily consistent because everything is determined by an algorithm. So it's not as though you're making any route isn't the same from day to day. It's the system is just lining up the addresses and the way that it thinks is most logical, which I can tell you from talking to drivers isn't necessarily always what is actually most logical. And then that's just getting matched with a person. So I don't exactly know what if there's like a reason behind why they do that, but I do know that drivers feel that the job would be easier and safer, and like you said, also better potentially for the customer if they were doing the same thing every day. Because yes, you would know, you know, like who the neighbors are, which dogs are nice, which dogs are mean, where to leave the package, but also, you know, how to expect traffic patterns and things like that. And there's a case we talk about in our story in Pennsylvania where the driver told after, you know, he unfortunately made a bad left turn and cut off a motorcycle, and the motorcyclist was killed. And that driver of that van told police that he had just made a left-hand turn onto this main road, and he was looking for his next main turn. And he said he looked and didn't see the motorcycle, but there seemed to be a case of, you know, he wasn't exactly sure where he was going, and he was looking for the road. And so I think drivers would, from what I've heard, drivers would feel comforted by having a more of a routine every day.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. All right, let's go next to Riley calling from Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Riley.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well.
My question is, it seems like every time Amazon rolls out a new form of shipping, be it the one day, like the next day shipping, I work for the post office. It seems like we end up with more of the second day delivery. I didn't know if that's something that you've seen through your reporting.
Thanks for calling.
That's fascinating. So you work for the post office and you deliver Amazon packages?
Yes. I do. The route that I'm delivering, I do around 150, 160 packages a day. It seems about 100 to 120 of those packages every day are from Amazon.
And they're mostly second day delivery packages you're noticing?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, the story is obviously mostly about the delivery service partner contractors and less about their relationship with USPS, but that's, so is that adding pressure to the USPS system in your opinion?
Yes, because the way our pay works, being a rural carrier is off of route evaluation, so be it, we're counted for, let's say, an average of 120 packages a day. If I end up with 30 more, then that's 30 more packages I'm not getting paid for delivering.
Fascinating.
FedEx, as you mentioned, used to deliver packages for Amazon and then broke off that contract. Do we know why that happened?
My understanding is that they were concerned they weren't making enough money off of the deal anymore. Excuse me. I don't have a lot more detail than that. I think there's a lot of competition in this space right now between UPS and other carriers and the delivery service network to see, you know, who's going to get the biggest piece of that pie.
I guess one advantage for Amazon is if it has a lot of upstart companies, delivery services around the country, starting up and getting packages done, if those companies go belly up, Amazon hasn't really lost anything. They just find another company willing to try it out.
Right. And so when I'm talking about the Facebook groups full of people who are, you know, awaiting to see if their application is going to be approved and they're going to get to start one of these companies, they're very eager to take advantage of what they feel, you know, could be a really lucrative opportunity for them. So obviously, you know, Amazon has a relationship with these companies that they put time into. So I don't think that they are, you know, willing to drop them, you know, at the drop of a hat. But if it does come to that and they're not performing to Amazon's standard or they're, you know, negotiating their rates too aggressively, there's an example in our story of someone who felt that they, you know, deserved more money from Amazon. And when that turned into a contentious relationship, they just sort of dropped her company, causing her to declare bankruptcy. There are absolutely plenty of people waiting in line to, you know, lease some vans and buy some insurance and get on the road.
So it is easy, perhaps appropriate, to point the finger at Amazon for damage done by drivers who deliver their packages. Do we as Amazon customers bear any of the responsibility for demanding things quickly, even when it may not be necessary?
Well, I think you raised an interesting point. Are consumers demanding this, or are they being told it's possible? Mm. And so they say, okay, you know, for me, I'm not here to tell anyone personally what they should do. Millions of Americans are Prime members, and I'm not sure that necessarily that's going to change. It's up to everyone on their own, right, if they want to be a Prime member and continue to participate in this system, for sure. But I'm interested to see what happens with this letter from the senators, and I think if people are concerned about it, that the regulatory route is something they should keep an eye on, for sure.
Caroline O'Donovan is a reporter with BuzzFeed News. Her article was entitled "Amazon's Next Day Delivery Has Brought Chaos and Carnage to America's Streets." Caroline, thank you so much for making time to speak with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KERA Think. We do hope you'll subscribe to the Think podcast using your favorite podcast app. And if you want to learn about upcoming shows, check our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.